Chapter 31. Christ, the Light of the World. Can you tell how many different names the Bible uses in speaking of Jesus? You remember the angel said, "His name shall be called Jesus, because he shall save his people from their sins." Not only is he called Jesus, but he is called the Son of God, Son of Man, Christ, Messiah, Elder Brother, Master, Teacher, Friend, Guide, Redeemer, and 330 names beside these mentioned, 341 in all. And every name is precious to us. Sometimes one name seems more precious than another, but always to us, every name is above all other names. You know St. John wrote for Christians, and his book has been a sort of guidepost that has helped millions to a right path. His central thought is Jesus, the Eternal, Incarnate Word, the life and the light of the soul. All through the book of St. John is kept ever present the thought we love to repeat regarding Jesus, which we took up in the very first sentence of his book. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with him, and the life was the light of men, and the light shineth in darkness. We now take up another story about Jesus, which is told by John, not long after the time when Jesus stood up in the temple and of himself said, "I am the light of the world." You remember how the Pharisees said to him, "You bear witness of yourself. Thy witness is not true." Instantly, Jesus replied, "I know where I came from and where I am going. You know nothing about this matter, from whence I came or whither I go. So if I do bear witness of myself, my witness is true." Was there ever such an interesting book as the Bible? If you own, printed by itself, just the book of St. John, you can find it the most fascinating book ever read. The story of healing the man born blind, if printed for the first time today, would create more interest than any news item of this century. You know about the Pool of Siloam, southeast of Jerusalem, in the valley of the soft-flowing Kidron. It was a beautiful place, the water coming fresh from a fountain up the valley and running through a subterranean tunnel nearly 2,000 feet long. The name of the Pool of Siloam meant sent and was a symbol of him who was sent into the world to give light to the world. One Sabbath, as Jesus was passing by the temple gate, he saw a blind man sitting by the roadside, begging. The disciples noticed him, and as they had thought that any physical ill was caused by some special sin, they said, "Rabbi, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind?" In reading the life of Jesus, you notice that he always refuses to sit on a judgment seat and state his opinion regarding the sins of others. Do you notice also what a charming trait of character that is? It always makes us think of rose gardens. It was that way this time Jesus refused to enter into any argument in regard to the matter, or to pass judgment upon the man or his parents. Jesus said that the blindness which this man suffered was not caused by any particular sin, either by his parents or himself. But he said, "I am here, and as long as I am here living in this world, it is my business to work." Here was an opportunity to work, to do good, not only to the blind man, but to teach a lesson on opportunity to the disciples, and a lesson to others, that he came into the world to be the light of the world. So, without delay, Jesus spat upon the ground, made clay of the spittle, and put this clay on the eyelids of the blind man. Then Jesus told the blind man, "Go wash in the Pool of Siloam." Was that blind man willing to start off down that pool and wash the clay off of his eyes? His life had been one in which he had had to train his willpower ever since he could remember. You have seen blind men walk with their cane, touching a curbstone here and a hitching post there. Always willpower had to be used to show them where they were and force them forward. The daily doing of some really hard thing had given this blind man a fine will, as you will see later when the scribes and rulers begin to question him. His will had been trained until he could say what he thought without a particle of indecision. People were not very kind and helpful in those days before Jesus came to teach us how to have helping hand societies or to feel that we must be our brother's keeper. The story does not read as though one single soul offered to take the man down that steep hill to the pool or offered to wash off the mud from his eyes. What a heartless world it was. But the man had willpower. How good it was that he did not stop to dilly-dally with the order which Jesus made. Dearly as the Jews enjoyed discussions, this man did not stop to argue about the laws of nature as ordained by God, or that troubles are used by God for discipline or chastisement. Then go on and discuss the difference between chastisement and discipline. Doctrines and discussions were far from his mind as he stumbled along down that path, wrapping his cane on the ground and on the earth beside him as he went. How eager we are to see him reach the pool and wash off that mud. He reaches it at last. Jesus and his disciples do not seem to wait and see what happens to the man. They know what will happen if the man does exactly what Jesus told him to do. The man did that. Oh, how good it is exactly to obey Jesus. He went away, therefore, and washed. And came seeing. Now, if a 20th century reporter for a big city daily had the marvelous fact for his story on the morning paper, he would have made that one sentence 2,000 words. But whether in the first century or the 20th, we are glad that a new world, greater than the man ever dreamed possible, had come to him. What do you suppose heroic Helen Keller would say if sight could come to her? How glad all the whole round world would be if it could come. Perhaps God helps her to do a greater work for the world than she could dream of doing if she had her two eyes like you and me. That is what God allowed this blind man to do, who washed his eyes in the pool of Siloam. See how the story of his blindness has come down to us, and how it helps the millions who have read it and who will read it in the ages to come. His neighbors, therefore, and they which saw him aforetime, that he was a beggar, said, Is not this he that sat and begged? Others said, It is he. Others said, No, but he is like him. He said, I am he. Can you hear his exultant tones as he said that? They said therefore unto him, How then were thine eyes opened? He answered, That man that is called Jesus made clay, and anointed mine eyes, and said unto me, Go to Siloam, and wash. So I went away and washed, and I received my sight. Did you ever hear so good a witness in court as that? Clear as morning sunlight, direct as an arrow that hits the mark. But the man was in a worse box than he would have been in a modern court, with the keenest lawyers of any land cross-questioning him. St. John tells the story in a perfect manner, tells it in a way that wise reporters might do well to copy, tells how the people began to question in regard to where Jesus was, and did Jesus actually do this beautiful, blessed act of giving sight to the man on the Sabbath day? Now, here was a work performed on the Sabbath day by the rabbi whom the priests and rulers denounced. So the blind man who could see was taken before these dignitaries and asked to confess what Jesus had done for him. Was he going to be silent? Was he ashamed? Was he afraid? No, 1,000 times the everlasting no. The man repeated the story of the way he received his sight. What were these rulers to do about this matter so as to injure Jesus? There was no doubt about the miracle. For hundreds of people knew this man and had known him for years. He was so changed in looks and actions that at first they did not know him. But now they stood right by him, declaring that they knew this man even though so greatly changed. But the miracle was performed on the Sabbath day, said the rulers, and according to the tradition of the elders, to anoint the eyes with salve on the Sabbath is wrong, for that is work. That settles the matter, added another ruler who hated Jesus. This man is not from God, because he keepeth not the Sabbath. Not so swift in your judgment, said another of the council. How could a man that is a sinner, a man who would break the Sabbath, do such a miracle? And there was a division among them, and the court and council let the witness alone until they could get their own differences settled. And they were in more perplexing straits than a young judge of a court today when elderly lawyers propound questions that it would take a large law library to help unravel. But back they go to the witness. They will see what opinion he has of Jesus, so they said, What do you think of this man who has given you sight? Just think of asking this happy man what he thinks about this matter. He was a sturdy witness. You know he had trained his willpower, and now it is of use to him. I think this man is a prophet. Yes, more than that, he is a prophet. The enemies of Jesus put their heads together and said, What shall we do next? Let us send officers right off for the parents of this man on the witness stand. Perhaps we can refute his testimony. Maybe the man never was blind. So when the parents of the man came, they said, Is this your son, who ye say was born blind? How then doth he now see? The parents were not intending to get into any trouble with this council, so they only answered the questions asked, just like any good witness. We know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. But how he now seeth, we know not, or who opened his eyes, we know not. Ask him. He is of age. He shall speak for himself. These parents knew that the council had declared that if anyone confessed that Jesus was the Christ, that it would have that person put out of the synagogue, and no one wanted to be excommunicated. So John tells us that was why the parents told the council that their son was of age. Ask him. So they called a second time the man that was blind and said unto him, Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. But this man had made better use of his knowledge of willpower than the most noted psychologist, and stood there undaunted, fearless, self-reliant. He also knew what excommunication meant, that socially and religiously he would be a non-entity. He not only would be shut out of the synagogue, but would never be counted as present anywhere. More than that, no one but wife or child could come within 4 cubits of him, and if anyone died in his home, there could be no mourning and wailing for the dead. This man knew what it would mean if he did not agree with the council. So when he was told to give glory to God and acknowledge Jesus a sinner, he replied, I cannot see why you call this man a sinner. I know nothing about your statement, but one thing I do know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. But these rulers were not to be silenced when they wanted to find a way to harm Jesus, so they went back to one of the first questions. What did he to thee? How opened he thine eyes? I have told you once already, said this fine witness on the stand before the Jewish council. Why did you not listen and remember? Do you want me to tell you again? Perhaps you would, like myself, wish to become his disciple. Was ever a Jewish court treated with so little deference? But they had badgered this witness until he felt justified in answering as he did. And they were so angry and so determined to put Jesus out of the way that they not only forgot their dignity, but even began to revile the witness by retorting, Thou art his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. But as for this man, we know not whence he is, only we know he is a sinner. Oh, see the man who a few hours previous was the blind beggar. See him. Hear him as brave and lion-hearted he answers these men. Well, here is the most wonderful thing I ever heard of. You say that you do not know whence he is or who sent him into the world, and yet he was able to open my eyes. Any one of you who can do such a miracle as that, You know even better than I that he must have been sent from God. We, you and I, know that God heareth not sinners. But if any man be a worshipper of God and do his will, him he heareth. Since the world began, it was never heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Oh, how dared this blind beggar talk to that council! But how we do like him! Now see that council, Orientals every one. What? They cried out in a torrent of abuse. What? You, born not only blind, but born a sinner. You try to teach us? We will this instant excommunicate you, and here and now you are cast out of the synagogue. What do you suppose Jesus thought when he heard about this first one who had confessed him before the great world? The first one in the new kingdom to confess Jesus.